Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. This show is not like any other show out there. We tell the truth. No one controls what we say, and we're on a mission to expose what is going on in government on both sides of the aisle and in between. You can go to katedalyradio.com for more podcasts of the show, and thanks for listening in.
Did you ever think that the latter half of your life would require this much ibuprofen? The Kate Daly Show starts now.
As all kids have tremendous talents, and we squander them pretty ruthlessly. I had a great story recently, I love telling it, of a little girl who was in a drawing lesson. She was six, and she was at the back drawing, and the teacher said, this little girl hardly ever paid attention. And in this drawing lesson, she did. And the teacher was fascinated. She went over to her, and she said, what are you drawing? And the girl said, I'm drawing a picture of God. And the teacher said, but nobody knows what God looks like. And the girl said, they will in a minute. Kids will take a chance. You know, if they don't know, they'll have a go. Am I right? They're not frightened of being wrong. Now, I don't mean to say that being wrong is the same thing as being creative. What we do know is, if you're not prepared to be wrong, you'll never come up with anything original. If you're not prepared to be wrong. And by the time they get to be adults, most kids have lost that capacity. They have become frightened of being wrong. And we run our companies this, by the way. We stigmatize mistakes. And we're now running national education systems where mistakes are the worst thing you can make. And the result is that we are educating people out of their creative capacities. If you think of it, the whole system of public education around the world is a protracted process of university entrance. And the consequence is that many highly talented, brilliant, creative people think they're not. Because the thing they were good at school wasn't valued or was actually stigmatized. And I think we can't afford to go on that way. Picasso once said this. He said that all children are born artists. The problem is to remain an artist as we grow up. I believe this passionately, that we don't grow into creativity, we grow out of it. Or rather, we get educated out of it. We have to be careful now that we use this gift wisely. And the only way we'll do it is by seeing our creative capacities for the richness they are and seeing our children that they are. And our task is to educate their whole being so they can face this future. By the way, we may not see this future, but they will. And our job is to help them make something of it.
Hi there, welcome. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. Glad you're listening in, because got a treat for you today. I have with me Melissa Smith, and I'm so glad because, man, we have some great stuff to dive into. And then, of course, I've got Allison Armstrong, one of the best relationship experts, how women can finally see what they need to see in men, and men can see women and understand each other kind of guru. I mean, she's amazing. Too. So I've got just a great show ahead for you. Sure glad you're tuned in for this. And if you don't get one of those hours in your designated time slot of your radio station, make sure you get it on podcast, because it's going to be well worth it. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Hi.
Hi there. We got some great stuff to dive into. I was just laughing because I have a grown man child son, and so my grown man child son's in another country, visiting another country right now, kind of a scary country. And so I don't want to be hovering mom. So I just wrote him a text, because I haven't heard from him. And I said, just press one if you're alive and two if you're dead, just, you know, to alleviate my worry. Just please let me know that you're breathing at least. And we'll have to see what he texts back. But, you know, I have to maintain a sense of humor, as this clip was talking about kids. It's such a trip raising kids, and the kids are always kids in our view. But we're going to talk about a little bit about government, a little bit about what makes us happy, how to measure happiness, all kinds of things in this hour. And I cannot wait to dive in, because we're even going to get into a little bit of marriage and father loss, which is very interesting to me. Where do you want to start, Melissa?
Well, I want to start with asking a question.
Sure.
How much, Kate, is happiness worth to you?
Ooh. Well, happiness is worth everything. It's why we do what we do.
No, that's not a suitable answer.
Oh,
you have
okay.
to give me a dollar value.
Oh, a dollar value. It can't be dollarized. It can't be dollarized.
how much is it worth? How much is time spent with your children and your family worth to you?
Well, everything. I mean, even doing this, I have to give up a lot to be here to do this. And if I would have gone the way of the world, I guess, and bought and sold media, probably would have made a lot more money. And so I had to give that up because I enjoy being with my family, not being told what to say, not being told what to do, and not being told when to get on the radio. So, I mean, it's worth everything to me. Yeah.
Right. Well, but I don't know how to count everything.
Okay.
And that's the problem.
Oh.
We talk about economic indicators.
Mm-hmm.
And how's our economy doing? There are some numbers that get kind of wonky mm-hmm. unless we really know what people are doing.
And okay.
It's kind of funny, this whole conversation, because this is something I have been thinking about. How do we know what people need and want? How do we measure that? How do we find it out?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked that to one of my sons, like, how do you know what people really need? And he was like, well, you ask them.
Hmm.
But you have to think about how we ask, how we measure, how do economists measure all that stuff?
Right.
Because it can lead you to some very misleading conclusions.
Hmm. How so?
Because economists want a quantity of things to measure.
They can only work inside that box of numerical effort.
Well, they want to know things like how many people have jobs,
mm-hmm.
What are wages? You know,
gotcha.
What is the dollar value of an hour's worth of labor for different things? How much workers are producing?
Right.
How many houses just got completed? How many houses just got started building? How much are people paying in rent in various zip codes? Whatever.
So that somehow equates to happiness. Whether you're
well, no, mm-hmm. And I don't think economists are even thinking about happiness, but we are. Mm-hmm. We are the economy, and we are thinking about our own happiness because, and we hear about this all the time. There's this big income disparity between mm-hmm. men and women, right?
Right.
Oh my gosh! You know, women are just not earning as much as men.
Yeah, they don't look at all the real numbers, like women don't take overtime and men do, and nothing ever gets quantified into that. It's just this blanket statement, but
there's no way for them to capture mm-hmm. the decision of a woman to reduce her working hours because of family obligations.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so they see that as lost wages. An economist counting, the bean counter counting, says, oh my gosh, we have lost wages. But to the parent that makes that decision,
mm-hmm.
there's no loss. That's a value-added decision.
Mm, true. Very true. I like that.
So, and there's a lot of things in our economy that are very similar to that. It's very interesting. Because as I was thinking about it, I've been a stay-at-home mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so who has valued my labor?
Mm.
My labor is not counted in the economy. However, decisions that I am making affect the economy.
Right.
For example, there's no wage calculation for me.
Mm-hmm.
There also has never been any way, because I'm home mm-hmm. and I cook our food,
right?
We don't go out to eat as much.
Sure.
So if we had a whole, say, all of the parents in the world made a decision and they said, one of us is going to stay home with the kids. One of us is going to be a household diva.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we
say. Yeah, right.
What impact would that have on the economy? There would be a whole lot less eating out.
Mm-hmm.
There would be a whole lot less paid child care. There might be a whole lot less consumption of a whole lot of consumer goods.
Mm-hmm. True.
And suddenly economists would be ringing all kinds of bells like, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, the economy's bad. The economy's bad.
Yeah,
look
right.
at these. Look how wages have declined.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But to the people who have made those decisions,
mm-hmm.
I see that differently. I say, wait, I'm staying home so that I can provide value to my children's life.
Right.
I'm staying home to cook nutritious meals because I can and not because I need to go out and I'm not tired and, mm-hmm. I just need to go out for dinner tonight.
Right.
I have time to devote to that or time to homeschool my children. How does homeschooling, a decision of parents to homeschool, does that have an economic impact, and is it being counted?
Yeah, for sure.
It affects the number of children who are enrolled in public schools, affects budgets, educational budgets. If there are fewer children enrolled in a public school, there's an economic impact of that.
Yeah, that's true, because it is. It's paid for. Yeah, you're right.
It's just kind of the hidden cost.
It's true.
And, good thing.
Well, you can't quantify what you being home just did for your family. You could feel it if you met your children. You can feel it in your home, when you're in your home, what that's doing for your family. But it might not always come out in an economical factor. I mean, in that factor of just being more well-being within your home, happiness, order, you know, whatever you want to attribute to that, the fact that you were home. So,
Well, I remember once sitting in a statistics class in college, and the professor said, "You can prove anything you want with statistics."
I guess you can. Sure.
And my husband is taking a statistics class right now and struggling with some very advanced formulas and stuff. And what the sample size and the way in which you use your data and what you're counting and what you're seeing makes a difference. So you can imagine.
It does.
Like I said, if we had a whole movement, a grassroots movement for a parent to stay home with their kid.
Right.
And it doesn't matter. I'm not saying men or women, just one parent, single income families become the thing.
Right.
The economists are going to start shouting about, we're having a crisis in household income.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So we be really skeptical. Start thinking about statistics that you hear very critically and ask yourself, what are they not measuring? What can they not see?
That's so
true.
That is so true. I was having a talk with my my one son about this and looking at vocations. And I said, choose a vocation that'll give you the freedom to be with your family as much as you can be. That will be your happiness. The money part isn't the happy part. It's the being with the family part. That's the happiness. That's the happiness quotient, you know? And he just looked at me like I was nuts. I said, I'm totally serious. Do something that allows you to be with your family. You'll love me for telling you this, you know, and sometimes it's really hard to see that because the world is built on the measurement of money equating to happiness. Because what you were looking at was why the government can't measure income. They can't measure happiness. They simply cannot, because they're not inside that. They can only, like you said, they can only look at certain numbers, and those certain numbers don't really equate to happiness and well-being and all those things. It's fantastic. I'll be right back. More with Melissa when we come back. Isn't she great? Be right back.
Balance of nature, changing the world one life at a time.
You know, I've always been high energy, you know, just going, going, going. And I turned 40 last November, and I was tired all the time. Now, taking the balance of nature, I just feel good. You know, I have energy when I get home to still wrestle with my kids and do the honeydews at home. Nice. I can tell that it just restored me to feeling normal, which is great.
Experience the balance of nature difference for yourself. Call or go online now and become a preferred customer, which gives you our best pricing and free shipping. And we'll take off an additional $25 on your first order. This will be a limited time offer, so don't wait. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code KATE.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
In the kitchen, clean up the evening slime. And he looks at her and says, "Hey, darling, I can remember when you could stop the plow. Oh, but ain't that America? You and me, ain't that America?
Hi, welcome back. Little pink houses. Welcome back. Can the government measure happiness? We'll get into that a little bit with retirees. This might apply to you listening as well. Just talking about families and whether it can do that with Melissa or not, whether the government can actually quantify, income. Can the economists actually say, income and happiness and sort of put that into a numbers game? Well, before we go there, go to the website, katedalyradio.com, also on iTunes as well. But go to that website. The SoundClouds are there that you can actually share as podcasts of the live recorded show. And then also go to Balance of Nature. Balance of Nature, only one in four Americans do not eat even a single vegetable. I know that sounds scary. You got a lot of people guzzling down Pepsi and eating McDonald's hamburgers, but not a vegetable to be had. And that's a problem. So make sure that you're getting a supplement. Balance of Nature is a fantastic supplement. I love the supplement. I've been taking it, and man, is it true to its word. That's all I can say is it's that good. Make sure you get on it. You can put in the code KATE, and you can get $25 off, which is pretty amazing. And I urge you to do it just because I know you need it. I need it. Everyone needs a supplement. And if you don't, start doing your homework. You definitely have to pick a supplement. And I would pick Balance of Nature. It's that good. 11 fruits and vegetables, servings of fruits and vegetables. You can even double up if you want. And an amazing fiber drink that puts all the right nutrients into your body for your immune system. It really is that good. Tell me about retirees, Melissa. Melissa Smith joins
me. Okay, so this is so fun because retirement is a really tricky thing to measure, too. The impact of retirement on the economy.
Okay.
Because obviously your household income is going to decrease, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But why do people retire becomes a very sticky wicket. Some people retire because they have enough money saved and they're good. They just want they want the free time more than they want to continue working.
Okay.
For other people, they continue working even though they have that much money because they like working.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's other people who retire because they have to. They're ill or disabled, whatever. And so it's very difficult to kind of get a read or measure the benefit of retirement because the motivation and the timing of retirement is so individual from person to person.
Right.
You can't just say, oh, well, retirement equals this much lost wages over time.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no way to measure that.
Hmm.
I think it's very interesting that people who are retiring do it for a variety of reasons, none of which can be captured in any of the economic statistics that look at retirement.
Yeah.
Crazy, huh?
Yeah, that is crazy. Just kind of rolling that around. Thank you. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, before we kind of end the discussion, there's a little historic tidbit that I think is really fascinating.
Okay.
And the historical tidbit to look at to see if you don't, this is absolutely factual here that we're talking about, is to look at slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So slave labor was supposedly, if you look at what people were saying before the Civil War, slavery was more productive than wage labor, right?
Right. That's what we're told.
It's more productive because you don't have to pay your workers.
Right.
So that
right. That's what
means
we're told.
That what's being kept, and without a doubt, slavery made some people very wealthy, and it made other people horribly poor.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
The slaves themselves were horribly poor. After the Civil War, after emancipation, the total labor supplied by former slaves fell by one-third. So is that because they were less productive or because they were choosing not to work like slaves anymore?
Interesting.
Yeah, so you could say, well, after the Civil War, oh my gosh, look, productivity in the South fell. Isn't that proof that slavery was more valuable?
Right.
No, it had to do with free people choosing their lives in a different way than what a measurement that an economist would look at would measure their life.
Interesting.
Yeah, per capita income went down,
right.
Not because people were worse off, mm-hmm. but because they were better off.
I hadn't really thought about it.
Yeah. Hmm. So, you know, they were working less, but having better lives. So it's the quality of life. It's mm-hmm. it's a thing that is unquantifiable and unmeasurable in our economy.
But we still try, and the government always tries to tell us, you know, what is our happiness quotient, and it just doesn't work. It just can't be measured in those ways. It just really can't.
No.
And
I don't think for any of us who are living our lives, I don't think we should be concerned about it.
Yeah.
I think we should measure our own happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And make decisions about our own home economy based on the things that we value.
So true. Don't you love that happiness study they did over 75 years? Longest study they've ever embarked on. And they talked to men over 75 years. And what it really came down to was all of their happiness really came from their relationships. It wasn't about money. It wasn't about what they had. It wasn't about what they obtained. It really wasn't about any of that. And what's funny is that when a Democrat hears that, just to kind of give the difference, when a Democrat hears that, they go, oh, okay. And so, you know, you shouldn't obtain wealth. You should share your wealth, or you should give it away, or you shouldn't be totally beholden to your wealth. When I hear that as a person more on the right or more conservative, I say somebody can choose the life they want. And if that life means that they don't want to go after the stuff, they don't have to. See how that kind of, it's like following the line of logic down the road and saying, I want the freedom to choose the life that I want. Not that somebody's going to make me choose what my happiness is going to mean to me or what's going to make me happy, right?
I think what you're exploring is the difference. I just heard someone speaking yesterday mm-hmm. about the thing that makes America great
uh-huh.
is not our great standard of living mm-hmm. or the American dream.
Right.
It was the valuing of the individual's right to choose their life.
The individual can choose, and I can choose whether I want to be poor or rich, and whatever makes me the happiest wins, you know?
And I think there's so much tension in American history between mm-hmm. collective and individual.
Yes.
You cannot understand American history without looking at the pull between those two things.
Right.
Right now, we're being pulled very hard towards collective everything.
Yes.
But that is not historically where the United States has found mm-hmm. its success and its greatness.
Yep. I did
it's
it.
It's been in protecting the right. individual's right to participate with the collective As they chose.
And here's the deal. I did a whole episode on this as far as reading from the letters of those that came to this country. And what I found so fascinating, and it really did tell the tale, as those that came over on the boats, as they started to write home, when they got into the air where they could actually write home, the letters actually got there. When they were writing home to Ireland, for instance, they were saying, look, it isn't easy over here. And you might fail at everything. But you'll have more opportunity than you were ever given over in Ireland. If you come over here, you'll actually have a chance. Over there, there is zero chance. But over here, there's a chance. It's just hard, and you might not make it. But it's worth it. And in all the letters, they kept reiterating that idea. It's about
Nation
freedom.
Of gamblers.
Yeah, it's about freedom. And if you want the freedom, come, you know. And I loved that. It wasn't come because there's a guaranteed outcome because everybody's forced to give you their pennies. No, it was come and you can make your life and you might totally fail, but it's worth at least taking a stab at it. That was the message. It's awesome.
And all of that is very true. And I think I really do. And it's been a thing that has preoccupied me, I've thought a lot about this over the last maybe,
mm-hmm.
Maybe a year or so, is this the sense of connection and belonging. And the more we push the collective, it's mm-hmm. very interesting, it's kind of paradoxical. The more we push the collective,
mm-hmm.
the less people feel that they belong.
Yes, yes, it does
it's
the opposite.
It's very paradoxical.
It is.
But I think belonging and connection mm-hmm. in our communities comes when we are seen and recognized for ourselves as an individual.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I think it is. It's you can't measure it. You want the freedom to do it. You want the freedom to choose it. And that's why I love this. And I love the happiness study. I love this because it's so true. This is so true in every single way. We as Americans have an opportunity to do with what we have, and we can become anything, make anything, do anything. There's certainly every opportunity in the book. We just don't think that.
Yeah. And I want to pivot around on another, on another historic trend that I think is fascinating that has to do with all of this and is widely misunderstood.
Okay.
And this came out of an article that I was just reading about romanticism as an intellectual movement. Hmm. And I want to make sure we get our terms straight here. I'm not talking about being romantic. This is about Moonlight and Magnolias. This is about the actual intellectual movement called Romanticism from the early 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
It started at the very end of the 18th century. Think about Byron and Shelley and all those people. And Romanticism has some kind of interesting... things like Frankenstein is one of the greatest romantic novels ever written, and obviously it's not a romance novel.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
So one of the things that this article was pointing out is how romanticism, that intellectual movement from like 1820, 1830, changed how we see marriage.
Okay.
And we're still reeling from the impact of that.
Interesting.
Before the Romantic movement, marriage was viewed as something, you know, and you read a Jane Austen novel, for example. Oh my gosh, you know, how could they, that contractual marriage,
right?
You know, how could they be happy? And I think it's a different view of marriage. And that didn't mean that they didn't want to have those relationships and have those bonds of marriage and love and all that stuff. But it meant that once you were married, you had made a bond and
a
you needed, there was a certain honor in upholding that.
Sure.
In the 19th century, led by some really like major players who we don't talk much about anymore, but people like Percy Shelley, or Lord Byron, or George Sand, the author, they decided that what was really important was passion, not obligation, not duty or respect, but passion.
Ooh, I'm going to stop you right there. Right on the word passion. We're going to come right back. We got to discuss this a little bit more. I want to talk about fathers, too. We're going to come right back on the Kate Daly Show. More with Melissa Smith when we come back.
This afternoon,
talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
And now I'm back to let you know I can really shake them down.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Kate Daly Show. So glad you are. From all over the globe. Really appreciate that. Share the podcast. Go to katedalyradio.com. You can email me too, kate@katedalyradio.com. I have the lovely Melissa Smith on with me. She comes on every Wednesday at this time to share what she is hunting down. What's the latest and what is she looking into and taking a deep dive into? And I really love that about Melissa. I love this topic. I could go on for days about this topic, but you know, marriage, and because we have Alison Armstrong, the relationship guru, coming on in the next hour, and relationships are always fascinating to me. And you were just talking about romanticism.
Yeah. So romanticism was an artistic, literary, music, you know, movement of the early 1900s. And this is so fascinating. So while if you think what preceded immediately before this, And really, it's part of it as well, but mm-hmm. it's kind of the intellectual movement just before is more Jane Austen, that kind of,
right.
we have social codes, and this is how men and women interact.
Mm-hmm.
Romanticism was like, none of that. We're going to pull up all the moorings, and we're going to live free and, you know, think about the 60s kind of,
right.
a following is kind of a beyond rationality.
Mm-hmm.
And that beyond rational thought includes like artwork and music and lots of things. But if you take a look at some of the leaders, the people who were voicing, they were the voices of the Romantic era,
mm-hmm.
Percy Shelley, this is what he said. You'll die when you hear this. Percy Shelley is the poster boy for romantic love.
Okay.
Here's what he had to say about marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage is hateful and detestable.
Great.
A kind of ineffable, sickening disgust seizes my mind when I think of this most despotic, most unrequited fetter.
Oh, wow. That was a mouthful.
That's pretty strong, right?
Yeah, that's pretty strong,
so,
I'd say.
Yeah, he said, he talked about true love
mm-hmm.
had to be passionate. He wasn't about self-sacrifice. He was about the passion and the emotion and the connection to the point that he deserted his pregnant wife
mm-hmm.
and ran off with a much younger woman named Mary, who he later married after his first wife committed suicide from the desertion.
The poster child for adultery. Perfect. That's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Percy Shelley, his second wife, Mary, is very famous,
mm-hmm.
and I've already mentioned her.
Right.
Mary Shelley is the author of Frankenstein.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's his wife. So apparently he must have gotten over it. He married a second time.
Wow.
There is a similar case with the French author, George Sand, who is
mm-hmm.
actually a woman.
Mm-hmm. Who's actually a woman.
She abandoned
mm-hmm.
a husband and two children because it just wasn't exciting enough. She wanted
wow.
a more intense, more rewarding relationship than she could find within the bonds of lawful marriage. She was Frédéric Chopin's mistress.
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Richard Wagner. And Wagner is a composer,
mm-hmm.
and Wagner's controversial. He's not played a whole lot today, partly because of his German Teutonic connections and Hitler's love for all things Wagner.
Hmm.
But Wagner wanted to be free to, he also abandoned a spouse because he wanted to pursue free love. Yeah.
So, I mean, going the opposite way of honor and commitment and
right.
you know, a promise made and those things. I mean, they wanted nothing to do with that and only to pursue how you feel at the moment.
Right, hmm. right. So he seduced the wife of one of his supporters.
Mm-hmm.
She had several children with Richard Wagner. And eventually, he said, he introduced her as his wife. But she got angry with him later. It was said that his death was provoked after by the heart attack that came when this other woman, his now wife,
mm-hmm.
accused him of infidelity with yet another woman.
Jeez. You know, this certainly makes the case for balance and having a marrying, if you will, forgive the pun, of two things, and that is honor, commitment, and passion. You can have both. Because whenever you live in the extremes, this is such a great example of that, that you can't succeed in an extreme.
Well, the thing that we like about romantic artwork, romantic literature, romantic
mm-hmm.
music
right.
is it's kind of wild abandon.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But when you're talking about the stability of homes and families, wild abandon does not take you there.
Right, because it'll change all the time. You can't count on that all the time. I mean, there's no way. You can only, that's where the
next time you're at a wedding
mm-hmm.
and you hear the wedding march from Lohengrin
mm-hmm.
as the bride comes down the aisle,
yeah.
written by Richard Wagner.
Yeah. Isn't that
It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, when you put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Hmm.
So
That is kind of funny.
That kind of let the genie out of the bottle.
Yeah.
And sincerely, that is truly the beginning for all that. That comes at the very beginning of what's in English history and American history would be called the Victorian Age.
Mm-hmm.
And we think, oh my gosh, the Victorians were so repressed. They
mm-hmm.
were so.
Yeah.
But keep in mind that pornography gets its start in the mm-hmm. Victorian Age with publishing and.
Interesting.
Yeah. Women were meant to be the moral water carriers for civilization, while men, the rules didn't apply to them.
Mm-hmm.
So let's kind of fast forward. And this has been kind of an ongoing conversation in Western civilization, right?
Right.
Where are we right now?
Oh, boy.
Divorce is half of adults now are not marrying.
Mm-hmm.
They're choosing cohabitation instead.
Mm-hmm.
And of those that do marry, approximately 30% will end in divorce.
Hmm.
So what did we lose with all of this? And we can talk about another kind of side issue. When we put aside obligation, duty, self-sacrifice, which I think are all expressions of love.
Yeah, because this is what you're saying is when we go into the extreme, then where are we now? Because we've gone into that extreme without those things that are at the base or root of that relationship, right?
Right. And, you know, I'm not saying that we should live loveless marriages that are arranged.
No, but a balance.
That's not at all.
A balance of being in love or loving your spouse in a passionate way, but also the love, commitment, and honor thing. It has to be a healthy balance, right? Because then
Correct.
What do we have right now? What are we surrounded with right now?
Well, let's talk about what happens when we really literally do say that love, duty, honor, commitment, self-sacrifice, you know, sticking together
mm-hmm.
as a family because we belong to each other.
Yeah.
What happens when that goes away? And there was a really fascinating article about the connection between the loss of fathers
mm-hmm.
and the rise of narcissism.
So true. Wow. What a connection. I mean, really, that's a big deal to think about that for a moment, how that it's impacted and made the narcissist. Wow.
Yeah, well, what's being documented in the social sciences is we won the self-esteem war. We have now raised kids who think very highly of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They think they can do anything. But the problem with that is all that self-esteem doesn't really make us feel good about ourselves when the rest of the world doesn't value us in the same way.
Hmm.
Right? So I think I'm the most amazing person on the planet, and I think all of you should think that I'm the most amazing person on the planet. That's kind of the definition of a narcissist, right?
Yeah.
And so those people who have been raised with that, they're unhappy because those are not the things
mm-hmm.
that make us feel good. And what we've lost is we have no sense, no traditional sense of authority in our homes anymore.
Mm. And how that equates to the narcissism. That's interesting as far as the loss of fathers, right?
Well,
kind of
yeah,
equating to that?
Fathers are not assuming a role as a leader in their families.
Mm. And women aren't helping.
And what happens is parents have shifted, I'm an equal opportunity employer here. Mothers and fathers
mm-hmm.
have taken on the role to be the gratifier for their children instead of an authority, instead of the people that set boundaries.
Right.
And yet again, we're talking about duty, honor, sacrifice,
right.
which equates to love. Now it's about, I need to work harder so I can buy more stuff and participate in that economy where we're bean counting all the wages and the stuff we buy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back and talk about what do we value? Do we value our children's happiness enough to set boundaries for them, enough to say no to them, enough to force them to deal with not unhappiness, but sometimes
yeah.
you lose.
Right. Otherwise,
everybody doesn't win a trophy at soccer.
Yep.
And that's okay. Let's teach them how to do that. And fathers and mothers both need to be saying, hey, you know, live with it. You'll get through this. It's okay.
Yeah, right. Right. And otherwise we're raising narcissists and then we wonder why we have such a big problem with it right now.
This is very interesting. This article pointed out that the type of relationship you as an adult had with your own father is reflected by the way you carry yourself and your ability to be confident.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like the same, you know, the relationship with your father for girls, you know what I mean? Has
yep.
such a huge implication on your relationships. Very, very true. I can see that. So the way that a kid carries themselves is usually going to be because of the dad relationship?
Well, I think it's about the stability of their family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think kids want to grow up in a stable environment.
Right.
Where things are kind of predictable.
Right. You're right. Structure.
And when their fathers are not there, in and out,
or
like I said, I would say this about mothers as well. But I think more mothers are out there kind of sucking it up and trying to get on with life. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of fathers who have just kind of wandered, ambled away, looking for some other passionate thing to drive their life.
Or
they're not being driven by the passion of commitment to their children and wives and families.
Right. Or we have women that are they're not understanding men, which we'll talk about in the next hour. They're not understanding men. They don't know how to bring out the best in men, and so they just undermine them or annihilate them in the process. And so then you have, you know, a big pile of mush because the woman is actually kind of doing that without realizing, even might be not realizing that they're actually doing that. So there's so many different layers of this that are going on right now. And I think it's very, we're kind of in a confusing time of how to be a parent for some reason, how to be a spouse. It's a really strange time. And a lot of it gets reflected from media.
Because we think that everything that we've done in the past, how many times have you heard about a celebrity who's going to push the envelope, you know, and
right.
we think that that's always a good thing.
Right.
I'm not sure it is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are times, and I think that's what makes me actually a conservative, because I think we need to look at what was successful, what was good, and what was healthy for us, and keep a hold of those things. Does that mean that society and civilization should never change? No. We should look for better ways to do things, but that doesn't mean
that we cash
that anything
in.
Goes mm-hmm. is the right way to move forward.
I totally agree with that. It wasn't even that for Christ. I mean, he didn't say anything goes. He had some standards. And I think that we're losing our sight on those standards because we love the word change. Like, change is always good. Like you just said, it's not always good. And so we got to be really mindful of that for sure. Yeah.
Well, we were talking about the tension between individual and collective. It's the same tension that exists between change and stability.
Mm.
You know, it's the same push and pull between how much do we change, how fast do we change, and what do we hang on to because it's worth hanging on to. Everything that's traditional, everything that has been done, is the stability of a family, is that something worth hanging on to and worth fighting for?
Yeah, for sure. And living those balances, like you talked about, the extremes not working, you know, fleeing at any moment because you want to be romantically pursued or be the pursuer versus, you know, total just commitment. You have to have both. I mean, it's so interesting to me that you have to have some balance in all of this. Everything's about that healthy balance. Melissa, you're
great.
Absolutely. Thank you. Really, you got my wheels turned for the next hour for sure. Thank you so much. I love it. I appreciate Melissa Smith and all she brings to the show. You can catch a picture of Melissa. Actually, she's on the website, katedalyradio.com. And anyway, we'll be right back. Thanks, Melissa. Be right back with Allison Armstrong. Do not go anywhere. You're going to want to hear this. Boy, if you want to understand men, and men, if you want to understand women, this is your hour coming up, too. Be right back. Thank you for listening to The Kate Daly Show. You can go to The Kate Daly Show on Facebook, The Kate Daly Show on Twitter. Happy to see you there. And also message me. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at kate@katedalyradio.com. Go to katedalyradio.com for more podcasts of our live show.